to Audio Error. This is Brandon O'Brien, Assistant Editor of Leadership Journal. Earlier this month, I had the distinct privilege of spending a couple of hours with writer and editor John Trott. John is a longtime member of Jesus People USA, which is known by its members and throughout this podcast as JPUSA. JPUSA is a community of roughly 500 Christians who live in a renovated hotel in Chicago's Uptown neighborhood and share a common purse. In other words, it's a commune. A very big one. When John joined the community in 1977, it was made up of a handful of what he calls burnt-out hippies who were trying to follow Jesus. Today, the community includes its founding members, along with a host of 20 and 30-somethings, and even an impressive number of families with young children. When most people think of JPUSA, they think of the description above, of intentional community. What they may not think of is ministry. In the 30 years since it began, JPUSA has developed into an impressive organization that is committed to reaching out to its neighbors in a variety of ways. For many years, they produced Cornerstone magazine, which John edited and wrote for until 2003. They run a homeless shelter, host the Cornerstone Music Festival every summer, and have recently begun a discipleship training school they call Project 12. When I spoke with John, he made it clear that even though he lives in close quarters with 500 friends, he nevertheless thinks of JPUSA as more of a ministry than a community. In this podcast, he explains exactly what he means by that. He also shares a few ways churches might adopt and adapt JPUSA's commitment to intentional living. With the current economic downturn, cutting costs by sharing things in common sounds like a pretty good idea. Thanks for listening. When we spoke before, you told me that you think of JPUSA as more of a ministry than a community. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that we are not here for ourselves. Primarily, we're here for others. And that means the wider community, our neighbor. Who is my neighbor? The biblical question faces us too. Not to say that my neighbor isn't the guy I meet out in the hallway that is a JPUSA member, so right. there's heavy overlap there.
Right.
For me, that issue is a really interesting one, though, because I did come here, as a young guy, I was drawn here because I was so intrigued with the idea of intentional living for Christ. I was a kid that grew up non-evangelical, met Christ when I was 16, went to college at an evangelical school, and frankly, really was turned off by the subculture. I mean, to the point where it wasn't like I knew that I was turned off. All I knew was that I was somewhere where everybody was speaking a different language than I was. And I actually was accused by the chaplain of the college of smoking dope. And I wasn't. I mean, but it was, he said it with such certainty. He says, "I know you've been smoking, I know you're smoking marijuana." And I was like, "Who are you? Where am I? Is this like a Twilight Zone episode or what?" You know, and it was because I didn't look right. I had I had long hair and wore jeans all the time, jean jacket, funky t-shirts. I didn't quite fit in the motif of what an evangelical was supposed to be like, I guess. And I sure had my issues. But I really was this fervent young guy. I was really fervent about my faith. So it really shocked me at times to run into that. What attracted me to Jesus People was the idea of people loving God and being together and finding an identity, like a family. It was like a spiritual family, and that super attracted me. Mm-hmm. Well, about a year ago, and this is like, I've been in community now from 1977 up till, in fact, it might even been this year, early this year, where I was sitting with one of the older members of the community. In fact, it was a woman named Dawn Mortimer. We were talking about all that, and she said, "Well, really, I think we're a ministry, not a community." And I really argued with her over that. I said, I do not believe that. I disagree. And it's kind of like, I don't care if you're one of the founders of the joint. I've been here long enough. I've paid my dues. I disagree. Well, it was a great discussion because really what it turned out was is that she was just so turned off by that elevation of community into this sort of like higher level of Christian that it's, this is why we're doing this is to, I suppose the most biblical way you could put that idea would be like if your whole idea is like we're going to be a light on a hill. You know, we're sort of going to be like, well, we're an example for the rest of the church. This is how it ought to be done, or something like that.
Right.
Well, she was just totally, I just hate that. And I said, okay, well, I'm with you on that. But why are you saying we're not about community? I came here for community. I came here because of that familial thing that you can't get in the regular American church to this degree. I mean, you can get relationship, but it's a relationship that, for me, isn't enough. No wonder so many people fall into adultery. No wonder there's such widespread, not only immorality, but all sorts of other stuff in the church going on that we hardly even want to talk about because it's there. Well, why is it there? Because there's no relationship. There's no accountability. There's no sense of like, this is going to hurt my brother. This is going to hurt my sister. You know? We're autonomous. We're trapped in the American fabric. You know, we're isolated. So anyway, I ranted, and she ranted, and we talked. And it was really great, because I think we came to a real understanding. Both the things are true. But I do agree with her point, which was, and it's Bonhoeffer's point too, if the community is not for the world, then the community is no earthly good. It's, you know... And I think that's, we have been about young people and ministry. Like, I'm not young anymore. I'm 51 years old. But the predominant number of people in the community are still a lot younger than I am. And the people that are coming here to Project 12 are even giving us more of a zap of young zeal and hunger after God to kind of remind all us old fogies, it's like, hey, so you've been here that long. You know, you've been here 30 years. So what? How's your walk today? You know, what have you done for your neighbor today? So that two-tiered thing: are you living the gospel? Are you talking the gospel? Are you in love with, you know, with He who is love, and is that evident in your life, present tense? And that's ministry. That's what ministry looks like. Our shelter is what love ought to look like. I mean, that's when I go over there and I see all the chaos, all, you know, people screaming four-letter words and, you know, some guy that's drunk puking on the floor, a fist fight breaking out between two people, and one of the staffers practically getting knocked out trying to break up the fight. I mean, this is real life, you know? But this is ministry. And so is sitting in a corner talking with somebody and crying with them and praying with them and leading them into a relationship with Christ. That's ministry. It's all ministry. But we got to get to it.
Yeah.
And community is a vehicle to do ministry. It's very, there's a pragmatic element. I mean, I'm jumping ahead to one of your questions in a sense, because I think it really answers, I think, the idea, how can people take what we've learned here at Japuza and apply it to the church?
Yeah.
Directly, frankly, I don't think you can. Directly. I don't think that we're a blueprint.
Right.
And I think anybody who thinks we're a blueprint how to do church hasn't come here and visited us. Because if you're here for any length of time, you'll be going, I don't think I want to do that. And I don't even, how would I do that? I mean, I have a house in the suburbs, and I have, you know, I have my life, and I have my family to take care of, and I, you know, it's like, no, and we're not telling you that's what you should do. I mean, if an angel from heaven appears to you one night and tells you you need to go join Jesus people now, well, come on down. But but really, what we have to offer is pragmatic faithfulness. Taking, you know, it's like what we've learned with community is that you can have very little, but if you pool it together, you can do a lot. The Cornerstone Festival isn't put on by a bunch of geniuses.
Yeah.
I mean, I speak from personal knowledge, you know. But it is put on by people who, together with enough people and numbers, and pooling our money, pooling our resources, focusing on a single goal, we're able to pull that thing off. And I think it is something of some value to the larger body of Christ.
Yeah.
Well, a church can do that. A church can, and how would you do it? I think you'd do things like, I can't say these things for sure because I'm not in that context. But for instance, the church could say, we're going to ask families to begin to pool resources. And it would be the families voluntarily doing it. So the church isn't even going to be directly involved. The families should do it themselves. Mm-hmm. But why does every family need a lawnmower? Mm-hmm. Why does every family even need a car, necessarily? That might be going too far, but let's stick with the lawnmower then. Yeah. Okay, why does everybody need a lawnmower? Why does everybody need a snowblower? How about if we actually create a list of the families in the church, and we have maybe one snowblower for every 15 families, mm-hmm. and everybody takes it at a certain time and uses it?
Yeah.
You know? Or we cooperate. We just have a snowblower day. Whenever there's a big snowstorm, we all go do each other's snow even.
Yeah.
That's a very homely example. But you see what I mean? A lot of it is just coordination and looking at material resources and figuring out what is our goal, what do we have to accomplish it, how can we get rid of this unnecessary replication of all this stuff, which is such a money drain on a congregation.
Yeah.
I mean, each family within that congregation even. And how about if we find alternatives?
Mm-hmm.
And focus and live more simply, like really, really begin to consciously think, again, that idea of aspects, you know, of Dewey Beard's, you know, it's like, you know, why don't we look at every single area of life and try to really comprehend how it fits into the overall biblical picture,
mm-hmm.
and contextualize it that way,
mm-hmm.
and find ways that we can serve one another and serve our non-Christian neighbors, and serve other Christians too, by husbanding our resources.
Hmm.
And that's, if nothing else, if we have nothing else to offer, maybe that will be of use to the larger church.
Mm-hmm.
The larger church can find ways, and they'll have to find them in their context, though. They can't come to us and go, oh, well, you do this, this, and this. Well, yeah, we got a common purse. We're living here 24/7.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It works. You know, we have an incredible amount of overlap and sharing, and yeah. are really able to preserve money because we live like this.
Yeah.
You probably aren't called to this,
yeah.
and nobody's saying you are.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, what are you called to?
Yeah.
How can you be a better disciple with what you own?
Mm-hmm.